in on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We welcome in our next guest, this analyst, brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. It is Yannick Hansen, joins us every Friday here on Canucks Central. What's happening, Yannick?
Not too much. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing pretty well. That first win feeling, it's always a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, it could have been a lot different today, that's for sure. Had they lost that one last night, it would have looked very bleak, to say the least. So it was good they got a win under their belt. One they had to earn as well. Not that they haven't been in the other games, but again, it comes down to the wire and you have to find a way to win, and they did.
For as much as like it's still early, do players get affected by the zero in the win column if it gets to be a few games into the season?
Had they lost last night, you would have felt it because now all of a sudden you're 4 games in, you have 2 points. Teams are winning. You know how hard it is to catch up. The media is going to get on you. The fans are going to get on you. Everybody's coming after you, the coaches. Winning is a lot easier to come to the rink every day when you're winning. It's easier. Everybody's got smiles. The days goes quicker and all these things. So you needed to get this win in order to not fall too far behind. I know we're extremely early in all these things, but you definitely don't want to linger around in the bottom of the standings, even though it's 5-6 games into the season.
Well, and when you have some new faces sometimes, and it doesn't always come together really quickly. I remember back in 2010, 2011, the beginning of that year, you guys only won 2 of your first 7 games, and there was a little bit of angst in the market after you guys made some additions and people wondered if you guys were going to be a good team. Do you remember what the mood was around the squad when you guys kind of only won 2 of the first 7 that year?
Not that one specifically, but I remember, and this again, I can't remember if this is 09 or it's 10, but we have a stretch where we lose or we're winless in 7 straight during the middle of the season. And every player gets called into to Gillis's office at this point and have a stern talking to about what's wrong and what's going on here. And at that point, we weren't at the bottom of the standing anyway. No team just wasn't playing well. So you want to nip this in the bud. Confidence is a funny thing. You can't hand it out. You can't get it when you want it. But when you have it, it's great, and you're trying to hold on to it. And it's one of those things that losing negativity, it just seeps out of everyone, and then it gets that much harder to correct your mistakes, your culture, and all these things. So you wanna get off to a good footing. You wanna get off to a right start. You mentioned a bunch of new players that are coming in. You want these guys feeling like they're part of the team, part of this team going in the right direction. And if the team isn't winning, you start looking at the additions. Okay, what happened to the team? They were so good last year, and now all of a sudden we're not. Well, who are the new players? Is it their fault? And all these things. So you want to get off on the right footing in order to get everybody in and then feel like they're part of the team and everybody is pulling in the right direction.
That was January 09. You lost 8 in a row. I think it was a Burrow shorthanded goal that ended up flipping.
In Detroit?
Yeah. Carolina that ended up flipping the script. And I think I remember Shane O'Brien telling us there was a good fight, too, in practice one of those days between, I think, Willie Mitchell dumped Mason Raymond, and so the team got into it a little bit. Is that correct?
Yeah, I remember Mason did have one fight in his career, and it was against Willie Mitchell in practice. No, don't let him hear that.
Yeah.
That's quick on your statues there. I don't know where you pull this stuff up. But anyways, yeah, it was one of those years, and it is one of those things where we had a veteran team that back then, a really good team. Some players that have been around for a long time. And it happens. It happens that you don't, again, that wasn't a matter of getting onto a right footing. It was just you hit a lull in the middle of the season and things aren't clicking. But you have to get yourself out of it. And the quicker you do it, the less that snowball gets to roll and it's easier to stop. So every team will face it. Every single year, you look at Edmonton last year, you look at them this year. Didn't get off to the start they wanted to. So it happens to everybody. It's just, how do you correct it? How quick can you correct it? And how do you get your back on the right footing? And yeah, sometimes it takes clicking that nuclear button and you fire a coach or trader player or whatever it is. But it is a lot easier when the players within the room solve this themselves and then start playing the right way, the way that will get them winning.
Now, Yannick, as far as what we saw from the team last night, we mentioned, you know, it was good for them to finally get the victory going. As far as the team play and how they're advancing this season, like what do you make of how the team has been playing and how they're trending? Do you think getting this win, you know, will set them on the right path?
Thank God for Hughes and JT Miller right now. I'm not trying to point fingers at anybody, but again, they're pulling the horses. Like Quinn played a phenomenal game last night, all over the ice, driving play, creating chances, scoring goals, setting up plays, and JT's doing what he's been doing for the last many years. Again, and you hope that that is your leaders, and there's a couple more in that footing. Brock had a couple of nice chances as well. So there's more players mentioned in the same breath as those two, but you're always looking to those guys when things aren't going well. You're looking to your leaders, your best players, to be at their best, to pull your team out of this, and then everybody else will follow. So again, early going here, Quinn and JT have picked up right where they left. Connor Garland's been good as well. Brock has been here and there, created some chances. You're still looking to see where the new players will fit in, Heinen, DeBrusk, the Big D's and whatnot here. But again, Quinn and JT right now are doing their things. That obviously leaves a big question mark of Petey. Again, he's got a new line, and you're hoping that they will come together. You can't expect it to happen right off the bat, but you'd like to see him mentioned in the same breath here as JT and Quinn.
It felt like it was Pedersen's, best game of the season, I guess. A bit of a low bar there, but he felt more dangerous. He had the crossbar. I felt like he created a couple of chances. He set up DeBrusk a couple of times on a 2-on-1, and then there was another chance. It felt like he was closer than he had been at any other point so far.
Yeah, and that's a good sign, because again, offensive guys need to be offensive. They need to generate chances. Preferably, they need to be scoring on these chances too. And I'm sure a couple of goals going his way will do a tremendous amount for his comfort and confidence. So again, seeing him on the score sheet is really all I'm looking for now. Yeah, it's great that the chances are there and all these things, but I'd love to see when I look on Sportsnet at the end of the night, okay, who did what, that his name is on there, because it is one of those things that these guys, they do get measured and weighed and how they produce and how much they do. So seeing him getting rewarded there will go a long way as well. And then you can kind of take a deep breath and you can start, okay, this chemistry with the breast that everybody is waiting for, how are we going to get there and what does it look like? But we need them to produce. And he did set up the brush right in the slot too. Yeah. For a great chance. So it's not like it's not there, which is, like you mentioned, a low bar. It's better than it has been, but you'd love to see these guys starting to produce.
They did generate quite a bit. And even in Tampa, you know, Vasilevsky had to make a couple of really big saves. Bobrovsky had to be really good last night. But defensively, I think, is really where more of the issue comes from. For me, there's still a lot of blown coverages. And I know early season, but even listening to coach after the game, there was almost a tinge of disappointment in his voice despite the first win, because he knows they can be a lot better defensively.
Yeah, and the D's has been, like, there's been a lot of rotation, not mm-hmm. just from the guys signed, but early injuries, early healthy scratches, and now forward is leaving, call-ups. They need some continuity here, too. They need some sense of stability, a proper partner to play with out there. And then when I mentioned this, is obviously the bottom half of the D pairing here, because that is where it needs to get sorted out as well. So get two guys or the bottom four D's out playing together and playing together for a while here, to kind of stabilize that a little bit, that will help the defensive end. Because there's nothing worse than when you can't get out of your own end, and when you are on your own end, you're giving up grade A chances left, right, and center. So it is tough to play that way. So some stability should go a long way.
Yeah, hopefully that's one of the things that we see and can develop with the team. And you mentioned as far as, you know, the forwards and getting a bit more offense from players. Last night we saw Kiefer Sherwood be very physical. He had 10 hits on the night. I thought the Canucks looked pretty heavy compared to a team like Florida that also plays heavy hockey. Do you notice the team being a bit sturdier, it seems like, forward-wise this season as far as their physicality goes?
I think that was by design, the way the players they added, the players they signed. It wasn't small and finesse. They were all bigger, faster skater. They were physical. We saw Sherwood play against us with Nashville and what he did. So they knew what they got there. DeBrusque is signed as hopefully scoring 30, but he's not small in any stature or shy away. Heinen has some swiftness to him as well. So it seemed like you wanted some size. You wanted some size to play with and some size that could skate as well. There's no question the two Ds they signed in Desharnais and Forbert, they were definitely for size and some deterrence, probably. It is easier to play with that. The regular season does get a little easier when you don't get pushed around the same way. And again, when you take a look in scrums and you see a couple of towering defensemen, it's like, okay, I don't need to get tangled up with this. We'll leave it at that, and then we'll line up for a face-off instead of getting into all these scrums. So there's no question that they wanted to make it a little easier on their skilled guys in terms of what you brought in, and that will end to how you play and how the team is designed. You sign these players, they're going to come out, they're going to be physical. You added Baines here for a game or two as well. He's going to want to show it as well. So it is kind of feeding into that style. Tocchet probably trying to lean towards a little bit more, that playoff style, the rough and tumble physical, wearing team downs a little bit. You do that with hitting.
As far as Quinn Hughes goes, he's the shot he scores on last night clocks in at 92.7. I know we've talked about it in the past, but are you surprised at how much he's been able to improve his shot over the years?
Not really. When you think about it, when he steps in, he's a little kid, and then they get stronger. So you're expecting that too. The thing is that how good he is, that you can actually take another step from that. And obviously there are things to improve on. You always hear that with these players that are the very best. Oh, I want to improve that. Sometimes it doesn't turn out. Here it's something as simple as getting a better shot. And it sounds crazy saying that for a Norris Trophy defenseman, that you're going to get a better shot all of a sudden. But again, he's a threat almost every single time he's on the ice. And again, not just passing, skating. Now you add another dimension. And if he starts scoring like that from the blue line, I know he's a couple of steps inside and twisted turn to round a D or a forward and then shoots it. But like then there's no way of stopping him.
He's had a lot of his shots blocked so far this season, and we saw even on the goal he scored, the first shot was blocked, it came back to him, then he shot it, it found a way to get through, and he beat Bobrovsky. And you can tell that players are playing him differently, they're fronting a bit more, the penalty killers. When you're a penalty killer and you're facing a player like a Quinn Hughes that had a good shot, what would you do to get in his way, and how can a player like that adjust to find the open lane a bit easier?
Yeah, I'd say it's almost impossible because of how shifty he is. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we played against guys with tremendous shots. Ovechkin, Shea Weber, to name a few. Those guys obviously weren't moving the same way as Quinn is. But what you did was you got in front of them, and then you hoped that they didn't shoot the puck. For a number of reasons, you didn't want to get hurt. But if you're in front of them, good players don't take the shot because they don't want to get blocked. They don't want to lose it, so they will pass it off. The problem with Quinn is you can't get too close to him because you all see how he moves. He spins and twists and turns, and now you're going to get burned. Because as soon as you start moving towards him, you have no lateral movement. And then you'd be hard to find a forward that can shift with him that way, especially the defensive forwards, which means now you are stepping a couple of steps away from him in order to not get beat and let him get even closer to take his shot. So again, he is very, very hard to defend. And it is almost like a by committee here, hoping that, okay, if this one does get by me, hopefully he's shifted and turned so many times that it's a wrister. And now my D is going to block this shot instead of me, because it is like you can't skate with him.
Right now, Quinn is top 10 in the league in shot attempts four. So it's he's taken a lot of looks. He's had a lot of looks so far and is wanting to get more. Last night, he was able to get 9 shots on net, which is just a crazy number for a defenseman. Jake DeBrusque, you know, he has a couple of big chances last night. He started on the third line. They bumped him up and played him with Miller and Besser there in the third. I feel like it's getting to a point where a guy that's coming in on a big new contract, like you want to find a way to get him more chances to score a goal and get the monkey off his back.
No, absolutely. It's one of those things. You need him to have some success too. Everybody looks at the dollar signs for what he is potentially here to bring in terms of production as well. So the third line is not a place for him. He is signed to play in the top six. He needs to play in the top six. And he needs to produce like a top six forward. So he needs to be given those opportunities. It seems like he's still getting them on the power play, or have been getting chances on the power play as well, which will help. But again, he needs to produce 5-on-5 as well, which he has been good at. He is a player you can use in all situations. He plays the penalty kill as well. So it's not like he will suffer ice times when the special teams are happening. But again, you need him producing. Probably more so because you need him and Petey to become that tandem.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and if him and Petey aren't going to be together, we'd love to see him play with Miller and Besser, but Arshdeep Baines has been up there, and he was there last night, and the coach seems to trust him. What have you seen in Baines' game? Like, do you see how the coaches like him so far?
I think it's you don't have the player you want there, now you're cycling through, and I don't necessarily think he's the guy either. I think the foot speed is still an issue there. He does have some hands and he can finish chances. We saw that in the preseason. I just think, and on the top line, the game's a little bit too fast. So I don't know if you're hoping that it will develop and the other two will make up for it. But again, I think right now you're looking for somebody to complement Besser and JT, and then a lot of different guys are going to get cycled through there, and I don't necessarily think we've seen the right fit yet.
Yannick, always a pleasure catching up. Thanks for this today.
Yeah, take care. Have a good one.
There is Yannick Hansen joining us here on Canuck Central. He joins us every single Friday, and you know, it is, I don't mean to sound crude towards Arshdeep Baines, but it is a bit strange to not have DeBrusque in that spot and have Baines playing ahead of him in that spot.
I think the main reason for it was to lengthen the lineup, because of how Florida plays as well, and he wanted to have four lines you can roll through. That's what I think, based on how Florida plays too. I'm with you. I like to see DeBrusque there. And when Dakota Joshua comes back, that makes it a lot easier, I think, you know, for you to load them up in that way. Because I thought of Garland, Hoglander, and Pedersen for one game at least look good. There's no reason, I think, for you to go away from that in Philly.
Yeah. With the amount of... Look, and I know people still want to see Pedersen have a bottom line and get some point production last night. But he did everything... almost everything other than like have something go in the net. Like, you create 5 or 6 big chances in a game, you're expecting one of them to go in.
So
he hit the crossbar, he set up DeBrusque for multiple chances. Like, you're expecting one of those to go in at least.
Yeah, he set up 5 good scoring chances, 4 grade A's.
Yeah.
And he had the one shot off the crossbar. I would still like to see him be a bit more aggressive in getting his shot off.
Yeah.
I think I'd like to see that a bit more. But I did think, you know, he created enough scoring chances where at least one or two should have gone in. You're right about DeBrusque. I mean, in the 2-on-1 with DeBrusque, and then the pass he made to him, which was a nice slip pass from the point down to DeBrusque, and he was alone with the goaltender, Bobrovsky. And to me, it felt like he had a really weak shot off.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he realized how much time he had and how much space he had.
So he did break the stick.
Yeah, maybe that's
right after.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it was a little broken.
Yeah, good point.
And he didn't realize, obviously. Yeah. And like, he only realized when he went to go take the shot.
Yeah, maybe that's a good point, because he did break his stick on the bench. But I mean, that was another great chance for him, right? And then he set up Hoglander for an incredible chance. Now, a shot doesn't come off and doesn't register as a chance on the shot metrics, but it was a saucer pass from the side wall over to Hoglander going to the net. If he tips that, it probably goes in, or a very good chance of going in. And he had an incredible... He also had another pass to Garland, similar one from the near boards across, and Bobrovsky had a stick on it last second. Would have been a tap-in. So, I mean, he set up some really great A chances last night.
It was, still not a perfect performance. Didn't look like the biggest game breaker out there, but Pettersson was involved last night and created a number of chances.
Yeah, and I saw people say, oh, he's back, or it's great. It's like, yeah, I mean, it was better in some degree, some cases, and I don't think he's been bad this season.
It just shows how much we've lowered the bar.
Exactly, and I think the other part is, I don't think he's been as bad as the conversation's kind of been, but the expectations are high, rightfully so, and he hasn't gotten there. And again, considering how low his game was last year, and how it's starting, it's not going to turn over right away. It's going to be a progression. And hopefully last night's a positive step, and not just like, hey, this is a nice game, what happens? And then he doesn't play well. Like, this has to be a bit of an ascension here with each performance.
I'm sure there will be no questions about Elias Pettersson in the mailbag.
None.
Not like he's a big topic of conversation with the fan base. I don't know. No, wouldn't expect it. It's Dan Riccio, Sad TR Shaw. It's a Mailbag Friday. That's coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In on Canuck Central here in the Kintec studio as final segments close out the weekend. Canucks and Philadelphia Flyers tomorrow afternoon, a 4 o'clock puck drop. You'll hear it here on the station and watch it on Sportsnet. Also here on the station tomorrow night, the Vancouver Giants up against Prince Albert out of the Langley Event Center. And now joining us, Nathan Canter, Giants play-by-play. Thanks for this, Nathan. How are you?
Doing well. It was weird for a second. I was hearing the Cars for Kids commercial going off a little bit. But how are you guys doing?
we're doing really well, man. It's Canucks got their first win of the season. Things are going well, and I know the Giants bit of an up and down start, but the one of the talks of the dub right now is Cameron Schmidt. This kid's putting on a show right now.
Oh boy, yeah. I mean, 11 goals. Like, he leads the entire league. He is absolutely ripping it up. I was just getting ready for tomorrow for a rare matchup with Prince Albert coming in town, and I was just curious, how long it took him last year. He was a rookie last year, of course, 16 years old. Like, when did he score his 11th goal? He has 11 goals now in 9 games. Last year, it took him 34 games to score his 11th goal this season. Not and he finished with 31. He had a huge second half surge. So yeah, I mean, if listeners haven't had a chance to see any of this kid's highlights, it's not just goals. Like, it's beautiful goals. He scored the overtime winner on the road trip on Friday in Lethbridge. Just it's an NHL drafted defenseman that he just absolutely makes look silly. Noah Chadwick, drafted by the Maple Leafs, puts the puck between his legs and goes upstairs on the backhand to win the game. He's got 4 multi-goal games already. Again, we've only played 9 games. And yeah, he's electric. He's so fun to watch. He does bring you out of his seat. And it is obviously, I think the team would have liked to see a little more team success on the trip. Mm-hmm. They went 2-3, but the way this kid's playing, it is so fun, and it's going to be really interesting to see the NHL Central scouting. Preliminary rankings will come out shortly, I think later this month. And it'll be interesting to see what scouts think of him, because he is a small winger, but he is so much skill, so much fun to watch.
Well, at some point, the skill set and the production becomes undeniable, especially for a 17-year-old. I mean, he's going to turn 18 in January, but you're talking about a kid who's doing a lot better than anybody expected. We've looked at some, you know, preseason rankings outside of the industry, and they kind of mention him late first-round pick potentially, but, you know, if he had a bigger size, we're talking about easily like a top 15, 20 pick type of potential just in terms of skills in this player. And those guys don't come around that often.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's definitely, I think there's two things that are, you know, kind of going against him, shall we say, the size for sure, which you can't do anything about other than he's already doing, which he does battle. Like, it's not like he's small and shy. He does not shy away from contact. So that he's doing well. The other thing is, as a winger, that's unfortunate in terms of, right, it's not a defenseman or a center, which are kind of more prized positions, or, you know, scouts really like that, I think, more. The thing for him will be, I think, going against him with scouts is his defensive play, which is a work in progress and is a case with a lot of these young players. But bottom line, and, you know, Craig Button, I think if you listened into the international broadcast with Schmidt winning gold at the Hlinka Gretzky, the bottom line is he does things that other players can't. He can finish plays and make plays that others just don't see. And that, to me, makes him super, super valuable if you're an NHL team, because you think about what he could be. He could do a lot of these things at the NHL level if he works on all the other things. But it's just, he's a special, special talent.
Well, and you think about a recent player of a similar stature in Logan Stankoven, already having success at the NHL level with the Dallas Stars. And, you know, just seeing some of the clips and what Schmidt's able to do, I mean, the speed pops. And then the release, you know, scoring that backhand goal in the overtime winner. But, you know, his release on his forehand is also something to see. So he's like the shot plays, too. It's not just that he's burning guys all the time and finding space on the ice. He's got a legit shot on him.
Well, I haven't checked recently the numbers, but how about like a Cole Caulfield in the way that he started the season, right? Yeah. In terms of a goal scorer who's small, right? Like Schmidt. A lot of his goals this season have come on the power play with like a lethal shot. And which, from someone that small, maybe you don't expect it. So yeah, he can pick corners. And then you mentioned, the backhand goal, like that's a really difficult shot to make in tight over the shoulder. He has a lot of tools, including, as you say, the shot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, you look at some of the offensive producers, we know a lot of the talent on this Giants team is on the blue line. I mean, I know we talked about Mazen Leslie in the past. I mean, I'm still surprised nobody took a flyer on him in the draft, given right-hand defenseman with this much skill set. But as far as, you know, trying to find, you know, stability defensively, I know they have some talented guys. Is that kind of, you know, the struggle here, considering how much talent they have and how many young players they have, to get a bit better defensively as a unit early in the season?
Yeah, and you know what, for sure, in terms of they've given up too many goals, and I think that, like, that doesn't lie. You look at they're scoring at a great pace, over four goals, four per game, and they do want to be, for sure, allowing less goals. And I think they actually haven't played as poorly defensively as those goals against would suggest. I think this season they have been more aggressive in the defensive zone. I think they're not stuck in their own zone as long and as often as they were last season, when they had to rely on their goaltending and Brett Merwald, who was absolutely fantastic, but it was too many high danger, too many grade A chances against. I think so far those are down this season, and the coaching staff, Manny Viveros, Adam Maglio, Caden Jarvis, they do look at, you know, those numbers after every game. So they are obviously monitoring that and aware of that. There's still a ways to go, right? Defense with, I think, young players is always a work in progress. And there are some, because they're trying to be a little more aggressive in the D zone, there are some new things. And so they're always going over video and they're never quite satisfied. I think I want to go back to on the trip. They played a fantastic game in Red Deer. They won 5-2 and they were absolutely on top of things. They were not in their own zone very long. It was quick outs. It was, you know, pressuring them and the other team, and they didn't have a lot of time and space, and that's what they want to do. So for sure, there is more of an emphasis on that defensive zone, but I also would say, I actually think they are doing a better job of it. I think where they ran into trouble on the road trip and where the goals against really hurt them was there was discipline issues late in games, two games in a row that led to power play goals mm-hmm. against. And that really stings. And that just can't happen is you can't be taking multiple penalties two games in a row in the third period against the skill that Medicine had and Edmonton had. But I think a 5-on-5, work in progress for sure, but better than last year, which is an awesome sign to see.
As far as goaltending goes, I mean, two young netminders both trying to assert themselves, one guy trying to gain experience, and Matthew Hutchison really trying to, you know, nail himself down as a star goalie, our top goalie here. I know Matt Hutchinson's been getting most of the starts. Is there a bit of a competition, or is he kind of going to be locked in as a starter here this season?
Yeah, no, there's currently a competition for sure. I don't think you can look at so far the way that they've split, which is 6 games and 4, and think it's any other way, especially after Burke Hood in his debut played so well. He won in Everett. He made 37 saves on 40 shots. His next start, he did get pulled, and Hutchison came in and got the win and then won two more in a row. So he certainly has the edge with a little more experience. But I do think as of now, it is still open. And if, you know, whoever, it's a competition in the crease, which I don't think is a bad thing. And whoever is going to, you know, give this chance a better chance to win, I think will be leaned upon. And that's not necessarily Hutchison at this point. And you look at this weekend, you got a game on Saturday, then you travel right to Wenatchee, you play at 4 the next day. I would be surprised if they don't each get one of those games just because of that travel and that back-to-back. So again, I think on that note, it's still to be determined, though certainly with a little more experience as of right now, I would give Hutchison the edge.
So the other day, it was announced that Calgary Wranglers would be sending Jaden Lipinski back to Vancouver. He scored 24 goals last year, 66 points. It leaves the Giants in a little bit of a pickle with 420-year-olds on the roster right now, but mm-hmm. but getting Lipinski back is it's probably not a bad thing in the long term.
Not at all. This is one of those, it's really unfortunate, the business side, where you're going to have to, you know, cut a 20-year-old. But it, for the team, it's a positive. It's a good problem to have. It is a problem for the time being. The team will have 2 weeks, 2 weeks as of when he was sent down, which is Wednesday. You have 2 weeks to make that decision, who's it going to be, whether it's by a trade or releasing a player. But you do have to get down to 3. So he co-led the team in scoring last season, and it's not even the offense about him that is, you know, that's only his game. His game is an all around game where he can play in all situations and kill penalties and win faceoffs. And he was part of one of the hottest lines in the entire WHL last season, playing with Cameron Schmidt and Ty Haliburton. Those three were phenomenal at the end of last season. So it's great to have Lipinski back. There's no doubt about that. He brings so many, things that this team will lean on him for, whether it's leadership or, as I mentioned, penalty killing, faceoffs, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, the business side really does suck. And when you add, so you have Lipinski, you have Connor Levis as a 20-year-old, and then Tyson Zimmer and Kyren Gronick. I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's a situation where you might explore and see who needs a 20 in the league and see if you can make a deal. But it's difficult because you're already past that deadline. And so almost every team has 3 20-year-olds already. They're full. I believe Seattle's the only team that doesn't. But yeah, it's a difficult situation to be in for sure. I obviously trust, you know, general manager Barkley Parnetta. He absolutely knows what he's doing. It's just time is ticking and we will see. But bottom line, this is good for the Vancouver Giants because they get a player back who will play big minutes for them and provide a lot of value in his final year of junior.
And before we let you go, Nathan, tomorrow against Prince Albert, currently Prince Albert off to a bit of a tough start. What's the key for tomorrow night's game?
Yeah, no, they're definitely off to, I think, a bit of a surprising start. Like one of the keys, I think, will be not to take them lightly. And sometimes last season, I think we saw the Giants, you know, play down a little bit. Sometimes, you know, they didn't play their best against a team like Kamloops. And I don't think Prince Albert, with only 2 wins is that bad of a team. They play tonight in Victoria. So the other key, if you can go in and focus and not play down, that's number one. The other thing is you have to start on them. You have to you not let them breathe, because they're going to be tired. They're in a situation similar. The Giants were in a week ago at the end of a long road trip. The Prince Albert Raiders have gone through the entire province. They started in Prince George. They've been to Kamloops, Kelowna, Victoria tonight. Tomorrow, it'll be the last game of their five-game road trip in Langley against the Giants. So you can't let that one slip away. You really, really have to come out strong and try and play with the lead, which they've done in their last two games, which unfortunately were losses. And then, of course, the discipline will also be a key. And I do just want to put in a quick plug. The other thing for the Giants, that we talk about Schmidt and Leslie and Lipinski, if fans haven't seen Ryan Lynn, the 16-year-old defenseman, I don't know if you guys have seen any clips of Lynn, but this young player is absolutely, absolutely incredible. He is playing above expectations for the sixth overall pick. And he is a big reason why Leslie is playing as well as he is. And he was just named the WHL Player of the Week. So just another reason to come out to the LEC.
I love that. Nathan, we'll be listening tomorrow. Thanks for this.
Yeah, thanks guys so much. Appreciate it.
There is Nathan Kanter, Giants play-by-play. They've got Prince Albert tomorrow at the Langley Event Center. And you'll hear it here on Sportsnet 650 following the Canucks and Philadelphia Flyers, which is a 4 o'clock game time. Always fun when there's first round talent on the Giants that you can go into the Langley Event Center and see. And I mean, just the clips are enticing enough watching Cameron Schmidt.
Well, I mean, you know, Cameron Schmidt, he mentions Ryan Lynn, really exciting 16-year-old player. You know, Ty Halliburton was successful, was at Canucks camp as well, of course, right? But getting Lipinski back, like, there's some legit talent here, too. I don't think they're going to see Samuel Hanzik back, but he's still eligible to come back to the Giants. Yeah. He's hurt right now with the Flames. He could also play in the AHL, so it depends on, you know, where they see him and what they want to do with him, too. But he would also be an overager because he turns 20 next month. But, you know, this team is exciting again. I think the question is figuring out who the starting goaltender is.
Yeah.
They figure that out, it could be pretty exciting. But great stuff from Nathan. A good bit of info on where the Giants are at.
It's still early days in the season. It's no longer early days for the Vancouver Whitecaps, who today announced via Twitter and press release, playoff scenario update, due to a conflicting event, should the Vancouver Whitecaps finish as the 8th seed in the MLS Cup playoffs, wild card match would be played at the number 9 seed stadium, and that is what's happening with the Vancouver Whitecaps. They say, we worked closely with BC Place and MLS to explore all potential options. We're not a club that makes excuses, and our focus is to win on decision day. Our goal is to improve every season, and our ambitions have not changed. We are focused on advancing to round one of the MLS Cup playoffs, where we will have the opportunity to play at BC Place. That's from Axel Schuster, Whitecaps FC CEO and sporting director.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I'm not even sure if you can blame the Whitecaps for this one. The thing is, like, the Whitecaps have had so many stumbles, and they fall into so many pitfalls repeatedly. Yeah. And we know when they started out, they had these outrageous aspirations of being a top 25 club in the world, and it's like you're barely top 25 in MLS sometimes. You know,
MLS would have to be a top 5 club, like, league in the world before that could even happen.
Yeah. So it's, you know, there's a lot of promise. There's a lot of promising. And when they first started, it was exciting. But it's been one failure after another. Like, I understand that. And I do think the last couple of years, they've taken some really good strides. You look at the types of players they brought in, how they're building a team. You can quibble with a lot of stuff. But relative to MLS, I think they've done a good job, especially with their budget compared to other teams. Like, there's been a lot of good things, right? Yeah. And I'm not even sure you can blame it for this one, but it's so like Whitecaps, isn't it? Right?
It
that
is
like
Whitecaps.
Of all the things that happen, this happens to them. Like the news today was that this was planned well in advance. Like, there wasn't anything.
Apparently, the Supercross motocross event that is coming, which will not have Ricky Carmichael or Jeremy McGrath, any of the legends.
I have no idea who these people are.
Of motocross, who've probably been retired for dozens of years.
Quick sidebar. Before the show began, he's like, this should have done Guys Naming Dudes, Motocross Edition. I was like, I'm sorry? He's like, yeah, like, how many
only
motocross...
Only me and Costa know who the motocross guys are.
I couldn't name
here,
a single one. He starts reeling off all these names. I'm like,
Bubba Stewart was a G. That guy was nuts. Well, the way he would fly around the track.
They sound like NASCAR drivers.
The only one I know, and I don't even know if he was like a motocross guy, is Travis Pastrana.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Travis Pastrana. He was also a rally car driver.
Yeah, I mean, that name rings a bell, but I could not come up with a single name off the top of my head. But anyways, continue on with the Whitecaps.
So it's a Supercross event. Apparently, it was booked in 18 months ago, so the Whitecaps couldn't have even, you know, sort of had this discussion with MLS. Look, I'm sure that they explored all options, but I mean, the jokes just write themselves. They can't even play at Swan Guard because of Pumpkins After Dark.
No,
you know, I mean, it's just like...
Pumpkins After Dark.
No, it sounds so bad.
For sure.
It makes you sound like an unserious club. I don't care what the realities are. It might be unfair. It makes you sound unserious.
It does. Absolutely. I feel bad for them in terms of this because, like, hey, there's not much they can do from a scheduling standpoint, but this text nails it. Blame their play. Wouldn't it be an issue if they got points?
Yes.
Like, they should have been, like,
They're winless in their last six. They haven't won in a month.
We talked about this. What was it? It was in
They haven't
August?
Won since the Canucks started training camp.
We did a show, I think it was. Was it September, August? And we're like, you know, the Whitecaps, if you look at their games in hand, like, they could finish second or third in MLS. Like, you know, they're in a good spot here.
Out of the tank.
Yeah, they tanked it. So, I mean, ultimately, it's their play that led them to this position, because if they win and finish higher, they don't have a scheduling conflict.
Four losses, two draws since mid-September in MLS play. It's not good enough. It is ugly. And so what are the scenarios now? They'd have to win at Real Salt Lake, who are the fourth team in MLS West right now. And Minnesota would have to lose at home to St. Louis this weekend, who are 12th. So looking unlikely that the Whitecaps would get the favorable situation that they need to play out should they win. And the cherry on top of all of this, you know who the 9 seed is right now? Portland, one of your biggest rivals. So you're going to have to give up a home game in a single elimination playoff to one of your biggest rivals and play in front of their home fans.
Yeah, I hope they get a cut out of the revenues. I really do.
Well, that would be, I guess, one small dub in the whole situation.
No, okay. That's tough. Before we go, because you brought up you know, motocross, Carpenter Nick texts in and says, Jack Pastrana and Nitro Circus were and are jackass with talent. They hold the Guinness record for most records in a day. We learn new things.
Chad Reed was also pretty good, but yeah, Ricky Carmichael and Bubba Stewart, they were the motocross version of like Schumacher versus Hakkinen.
Why do you know so much about this?
I had no idea this side of you.
My brother loved to ride motocross.
Oh, okay, that's why you know. I have no, like, I can't tell you a single thing about motocross. Like, I could actually talk to you about skateboarding, but I can't do motocross. Yeah,
I was a big Tony Hawk guy too back in the day.
Yeah,
and BMX, Dave Mira. It was because of the video games too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we all played the video games, but like, I used to love X Games. I'll still watch. Like, Olympics, I love the skateboarding and like the.
Is Bob Burnquist still around? That guy was just nuts.
That guy was the stuff he was trying.
I know. Bucky Lassick, man. Fire it up. Guys naming dudes. All right, Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah. This has been Canuck Central. We'll see you at the game tomorrow, 4 o'clock, Canucks and Flyers on Sportsnet 650.